Welcome to another episode of Pit Lane Parlay.
Welcome to another episode of Pit Lane Parlay. My name is host Mike Jokum. Matt and Jess join me. How you guys doing?
Good.
And we have joining us tonight is Adam Stern from the Sports Business Journal. Adam, you know, first off, thank you for joining us, and how you doing tonight?
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for having me on. I'm doing great. Appreciate you guys extending the opportunity.
Sure. And for those wondering, Adam is the motorsports reporter for Sports Business Journal. And we will dive right into questions here. We'll start with a simple one for those who don't know what the Sports Business Journal is. You know, what is it, and you know, how did you become involved with the company?
Yeah, for sure. It's interesting because it's one of those things where if you happen to work for like a sports team, or you work for IndyCar or Indianapolis Motor Speedway, you know, you'd probably not just maybe have heard of it on your own, but also, you know, you'd probably see magazines lying around at the office, or your boss might have told you to read it. So we're basically a trade publication that's extremely kind of integrated into the sports industry, kind of like a trade publication specifically for sports. So,
sure.
You know, you can think of all sorts of different trade publications that might be, you know, literally something for wood building, or you know, just anything over, you know, there's so many different all over the world. And, you know, this one is one that my boss is about 20 to 25 years ago started as a way to kind of cater specifically to people in the sports industry. So they realized that, you know, for example, the New York Times might do something on sports business if there's a big deal about Madison Square Garden in you know, the Knicks, but they're not necessarily only covering the business side every day. They're quite often just covering the basketball game. And if there happens to be sports business news, they'll cover it, but they don't really dedicate someone fully to that, even really to this day when you talk about the New York Times. And so, you know, they kind of saw a little bit of a gap in coverage, and they decided to start a publication specifically that just covers the business side of sports. I graduated in 2012 from VCU in Richmond, Virginia, and a couple months later, I landed a job that started with our online team, a little bit more kind of helping with the curation and editing of news from around the web. We do a lot of original work, but we also, you know, certainly kind of curate and note like reports from all over the world that have to do with sports business. You know, not dissimilar from, you know, if you go to ESPN.com,
right,
and Yahoo Sports had a big report, you know, ESPN is going to write that up. So it's kind of similar to that. I did some stuff like that with our online team when I originally joined in 2012. And then at the end of 2014, the person who was previously covering motorsports and a few other things left. They went on to a gig at the Wall Street Journal. And at the time, I kind of just got called out of the bullpen. But at the same time, you know, certainly always grew up, you know, watching, I wouldn't say watching motorsports, you know, nonstop, but certainly did watch motorsports growing up a fair bit. And, you know, through my couple years helping with our online team, you know, you learn, it's kind of like a baptism of sports business in those couple of years, because you have to help cover everything and help do everything. So, you know, certainly I've seen those couple of years just how fascinating the business side of motorsports was. So, you know, jumped at the opportunity when I got it. And yeah, about to wrap up what'll be my fourth season. So it's really kind of flown by. It's crazy to think about. But, you know, just, you know, I guess it just goes to show how much is going on. I don't really have time to stop and think about the years going by right now. There's just so much going on in motorsports. Certainly in IndyCar and, you know, NASCAR, F1, Formula E, you name it. So, yeah, certainly having a lot of fun, and still wake up every day kind of chomping at the bit to go trying to figure out what's going on. Like I said, you know, certainly even if you're just talking about IndyCar, there's a ton these days.
Yeah, I love it. Great insight there. I'll turn it over to Matt for the next question here as we go through a round of questions.
Yeah, to me, it seems like you were originally the guy to me who always tweeted out the IndyCar ratings from how it did on TV. And then, you know, as I started to follow you more, you had some great insights as just news around the racing world. And definitely one of the best follows on social media. His Twitter handle is @A_S12. Is there, I mean, I know a lot of our IndyCar fans, especially some of the fan questions we got today, all kind of focused on maybe some IndyCar silly season stuff. Have you heard anything in the pipeline that, you don't have to go into too many specifics, but have you heard anything in the pipeline that may be coming in the next couple weeks or a month or so that might shock some IndyCar fans?
You know, that's a good question. There's always kind of all sorts of, you know, one of the biggest parts of my job is kind of having to try and sort through, you know, random things I hear. You know, there's a lot we hear that we don't necessarily report or that we have to take time to try and figure out how to report. And, you know, sometimes it happens, sometimes it doesn't. You know, so as far as kind of, deals that are specifically about to come, I mean, you know, you have some rumblings out there to an extent about OEMs right now. That's something that certainly, you know, the fact, I think I saw Marshall Pruitt of Racer.com this week write an article. I mean, you know, the fact that he's talking to Jay Fry about that is a great example of how I would presume Marshall's hearing about that as well. So, you know, there's definitely some rumblings flying about, you know, is IndyCar starting to actually have found some sort of success or taker to become a third OEM partner. I don't have it confirmed yet by any stretch. So, you know, I can't say that that is for sure. But, you know, you talk about and talk about the next month. I mean, that could be a year away. I have no idea whether that's a month away or a year away yet. You know, we'd love to find that out. And as soon as we could try and figure that out and confirm it, you know, we would report it. But I don't have anything like that confirmed. You know, that's one thing that's kind of flying around a little bit. And we can get into more detail about that for sure. And, you know, obviously you got the title sponsor, but I don't think that's coming in the next month. And we could talk more in detail about that as well. You got the international TV rights deal, which I actually just checked in on recently. My understanding is that announcement's not imminent. So, you know, you definitely have a couple things that are definitely going to be coming as far as those deals, potentially third OEM. Obviously, you know, Fernando Alonso is still kind of a little bit of a question about what is he going to do the Indy 500? I mean, it certainly seems like he is, but, you know, he hasn't 100% committed to it yet. So I would think that announcement will be coming within a couple months, you know, certainly probably 2 months, but I don't know if exactly the next 3-4 weeks. So, you know, there's definitely some things flowing out there, but obviously most of the IndyCar silly season has kind of been taken care of at this point. I guess there's what, you know, maybe one or two TBDs left with possible, you know, with established teams that have named drivers, but it seems like most of the question marks have been filled at this point. So, you know, I wouldn't say, you know, obviously the IndyCar silly season at one point, you know, maybe a couple months ago was really kind of cranking. And so it's died down a little bit, I think, as we've seen some of these teams make announcements. You know, Ed Carpenter Racing confirmed who they're going to have. You know, all these teams, you know, Scuderia Corsa confirming who they're tying up with, their driver with Ed Jones now, you know, things like that. So I think mostly you're starting to see it kind of die down from a team and driver perspective. I guess there's maybe a few moves ago. Obviously, we saw, you know, Ganassi confirmed Rosenquist. So a lot of those big question marks to me seem like they've been filled. But on the business side, yeah, there's going to continue to be rumblings. I mean, you got the possibility of them starting the season in Uruguay next season, which hasn't been fully rolled out yet. They're still looking into that. And if it doesn't happen for 19, I would presume they're still looking for 20. So there's definitely all sorts of things going on. Nothing that I can say is absolutely imminent right this second. But you know, we're digging away. And again, as soon as we can ever confirm any of those deals, we're going to be reporting it.
All right. So to shout out to a couple of our fans who did submit questions, because you kind of did just touched on both of them, which is excellent. We had Michael Goodyear, M. Goodyear 007, and Colin Taylor, who both Patreon subscribers. One question was about the third OEM, and the second question was actually about Uruguay. So we just hit like three birds with one stone there. So thanks for your insight on all of that. We really appreciate it. And thanks for the fan questions there, guys. We'll pass it over to Jess here.
Okay, so I don't know if you've listened, but I am kind of the comedic relief. I like to ask the fun questions, not usually racing related, just kind of like get to know you questions. So just as a pre-warning there.
That's no problem.
And my first one always typically tends to throw people. So I'm going to give you a 400-pound block of Kojak cheese. What are you going to do with your cheese?
400-pound block of cheese. I would certainly, you know, take a significant part of it and put it in the fridge or freezer just to save it for myself, because I love cheese. So I would say that'd be the first part. You know, if I could find any way to monetize that, that would be pretty good. I don't know. I'm not sure exactly how I would do it. I, you know, I already got kind of some people who have created like the cheese heads for the Packers. I don't think they use actual real cheese for that. So I don't know exactly how I'd be able to monetize that. I'd be open to ideas, but yeah, I would say most of it I'd hopefully save for myself because I certainly love cheese. It's rare that there's a usual type of food that you would put cheese on that I wouldn't be doing that. I'm usually all about that. So I would say probably mostly have it for myself. But if you have any ideas about how I can make some money off cheese, please let me know.
Yeah, sounds like a
good idea. I am all for keeping it for yourself because I'm also a fan of cheese. So
I love that.
Back to racing. One of the topics you didn't touch on with Matt, and I'm sure we might dive into some of them a little bit more, but I know you tweeted a couple weeks ago about the potential for a NASCAR IndyCar doubleheader. What do you think of its potential for, you know, 2020 and beyond? And, you know, just as a motorsports fan, do you think that's the right path for both sports to head down?
I definitely think it's possible for 2020 because, you know, I know for a fact that IndyCar is open to it. And so you're already halfway there, you know, and now, you know, getting NASCAR on board might be seen as a little bit of a tougher part. But at the same time, you know, NASCAR right now is really looking to change up its entire model. They're really looking at doing a lot of big changes to their 2020 schedule. So basically in NASCAR this year, they made a couple changes to their 2018 schedule. And a lot of the changes occurred towards the latter part of the season. And they had to, based off their own bylaws, they had to release their schedule for next year, you know, well before some of these changes occurred. So basically what they did was, in part also because they're tied into their contract for 5 years, but they have some ways to kind of tweak things, but they decided to not tweak anything at all for next year. So basically because some of the changes didn't occur toward later in the year and they hadn't even seen how they went, they basically just decided to make the 2019 schedule essentially a carbon copy from 2018.
Right.
But for 2020, they're looking at really changing things up in a big way. And, you know, that's been essentially confirmed by the new president, Steve Phelps, in recent weeks. So, you know, when you have a situation where I can already tell you for a fact that IndyCar is open to this and, you know, NASCAR hasn't explicitly said, yeah, we're definitely open to it. But they're saying that they're open to some big changes. You know, I just tweeted this today and this wasn't from me. NBC Sports' Nate Ryan, a NASCAR reporter for NBC Sports, he interviewed Steve Phelps and he asked him about the possibility of dual IndyCar NASCAR weekends. And, you know, Steve Phelps didn't necessarily commit to it, but he noted that there's potential there. And he also revealed something I thought was kind of interesting, which was that NBC Sports' executive producer, Sam Flood, has apparently started to try to put together and is now putting together some sort of motorsports summit in the off season that's going to be held between NBC's media rights partners. So, you know, now that'll be NASCAR, IndyCar, IMSA, and then, you know, some other kind of smaller properties.
Sure.
And so, you know, and he said the point of that meeting that Sam Plus pointed that together is that, you know, NBC wants to see these series work better, closer together. They want to see more collaboration. And we actually interviewed Phelps as well for something that's coming out next Monday. And he hit on that with me as well. And he told me, you know, the top executives at NBC, they want to be seen as a motorsports network, but they also want to see the motorsports properties working better between themselves to help NBC. You know, they kind of want to make it a win-win situation. So, you know, I definitely think that while it's no sure thing and easily there could be something that could cause it to not happen at this stage, it's way too early to say it's going to happen for sure. But as far as the ingredients, I mean, you know, again, I've only been covering motorsports full time for about 4 years, but, you know, just looking back through the course of recent motorsports history in the U.S., I'm not sure there's been a time that's been more primed for this possibility than right now. And so, you know, again, it was discussed between IndyCar and IFC about the possibility of Chicagoland. Apparently didn't get that far, but just the fact that it was discussed and that IndyCar is still, you know, saying privately that they're open to it in the future. You know, I think there's a lot of potential there. And as to the second question about, you know, whether I think it would be a success, I certainly think under the proper circumstances, it could be a huge hit. I mean, you go to the right market. I mean, Chicagoland, I'm not sure if that is the right market, but it might be. I'm not saying it's not. I'm just saying, you know, whether it's Chicagoland or you find another market that you think even has a better chance, I definitely think that has the, you know, potential. You know, we, our understanding is that IndyCar would have run, I think, like on a Thursday. So I don't think they would have run on like a Friday, in part because I think NASCAR, you know, potentially has some Friday night races, Saturday night races, et cetera. So I think it would have been like IndyCar on like maybe Wednesday, Thursday, maybe Wednesday practice, Thursday race. But even, you know, whether it was Thursday or Friday, something like that, I think leading into a NASCAR weekend at the right track, I think that could be a huge hit. You know, what track is it going to be? And whether it would, you know, absolutely sell out the place, I'm not so sure about that right away. But just reading some of the social media reaction when we put our story out there, and just thinking about the potential for synergy from a TV perspective. And then, you know, hopefully you would think if tracks could get behind it and give fans some pretty cool value for the opportunity to see both, you have to think that it's worth trying and that there's some potential there. Again, you know, whether it's going to be a huge hit or not, maybe it is, maybe it isn't. But to me, it seems like it's certainly worth trying. I can't imagine, you know, as you look at these series, you know, NASCAR is kind of trying to reverse their decline. IndyCar is doing well, but it's still relatively small, and it wants to grow. So, you know, both series are kind of crying out for a little bit of help. So why not work together, I think? And if it doesn't work, it doesn't work. But I'd be surprised if it falls flat on its face. I mean, I think, you know, either you'd be looking at it doing okay, or you'd be looking at a smash hit. But can't imagine it would fail too, you know, insanely, because again, if you choose the right track, theoretically you probably already have a built-in crowd coming. And if you choose an area that has a, you know, IndyCar friendly, you know, fan base and whatnot, again, I think it could be a real big hit. So again, it's not a sure thing yet for 2020, but certainly something to keep an eye on. And, you know, we'll be trying to cover that motorsports summit that NBC is going to hold with their partners. In fact, I've already started trying to inquire into that. So, we'll see if any news comes out of that. That'll probably be, I think, in like December or January. So we'll certainly stay on top of it.
Cool. You know, great answer there. Thank you very much. Our first Patreon shout out of the night goes to the new guys. Thank you, Stephen, the author King, and Matthew J. Gruenholz, who says that he's an occasional kart racer, co-founder of Fantasy IndyCar, and was once mistaken for Dale Coyne's to-be-announced driver. thanks, Matt. Apparently that's true. And I'll turn it over to this Matt for the next question.
I thought Matthew was going to be Dale Coyne's driver at some point. Well, news to me. Anyways, you know, Adam, since you're kind of been talking a lot about, you know, just news that's coming up and, you know, we might see, or some stuff that's currently in the works, kind of describe what's the hardest part about your job when it comes to either just your day-to-day functions or, you know, gathering enough info to get a story off the ground. I mean, what's the hardest part about your job?
Yeah, that's a great question. I would say there's a couple elements to it. One of the hardest parts about my job is that, you know, my job is not only breaking motorsports news. First and foremost, I have to provide analysis as well and do feature pieces for, we have a print magazine that comes out every week. And, you know, a lot of times these days, news is breaking way too, it's a story that's happening way too quick to, this isn't every time, but quite often there's a lot of news that is happening way too quickly to try and hold it for print. And so quite often, you know, when there's news that's breaking these days, it's getting rarer and rarer that we can hold it till that following week when our print issue comes out. You know, there's sometimes we can in certain situations. The story about IndyCar and NASCAR possibly holding a dual weekend was actually in a situation where we could. But that's getting pretty rare, you know. So quite often we're having to push a lot of our news out online, which is great. But the flip side is that we also have a print magazine we got to put out. So, you know, one of the toughest parts of my job is just, you know, trying to stay on top of everything and, you know, trying to, you know, because, you know, a lot of the news we do as far as analysis, it's going to be about news that possibly I might break. So, you know, it's kind of, I might as well be on top of things. And that's why sometimes we end up breaking news, but I have to be on top of things anyway to help, you know, do feature pieces and provide analysis and do profiles, et cetera, for our magazine. So, you know, just trying to stay on top of all of that is quite difficult. I also have a couple secondary beats that are on top of motorsports, nothing too major, things like lacrosse, like Western sports, like PBR, professional bull riders, like things like that. I help contribute on. Sometimes they throw me on some general assignment stories as well, just like random stories that they might need someone on from, you know, the NBA or anything like that. So just keeping up with the job can be a lot. And then as far as, you know, breaking news and trying to confirm news, you know, it just depends. Some stories, there's just, you know, sometimes there's going to be a lot of conflicting information. The Fernando Alonso McLaren situation, of course, you know, is a perfect example of that. And we can talk more about that. But, you know, just situations like that, you know, trying to, you know, both try and report accurate information and do so in a timely manner. And at the same time, cut through what can be, for various reasons, you know, a lot of conflicting information at times. And sometimes people don't want to talk to you, or sometimes, you know, things are happening quickly, but you can't get in touch with someone. And just judging that all up and always trying to, you know, again, do a good job. And at the same time, you know, do your best to stay ahead. It can be turned into quite, no, I wouldn't say it's extremely hard, but it can be challenging for sure. And, you know, it's a good challenge in many regards. You got to try and embrace it and, do your best with it. But yeah, again, there's certainly times where, you know, we're hearing things and, you know, we might have, you know, I might have an itch to report it, but, you know, we got to try and substantiate a little bit harder. And next thing you know, it's taking you a week to get another source because it's a, you know, so there's just all sorts of reasons and ways that sometimes stories can turn tough to report, but it's, you know, that's just the way it is. And it's the way it should be. It's, you know, it's not like these things are meant to be easy. So, overall, it's still usually enjoyable. It's not like it's a terrible process to go through, but yeah, it can be challenging at times to make some of those things happen. So, you know, just trying to stay on top of everything and do all those things correctly and properly. And then at the same time, you know, make sure I'm doing a good job for my company. It can turn to quite a little, you know, time consuming operation for sure. And so, you know, I'd say that's pretty much the most challenging part of the job. But again, overall, you know, there's been so much going on in motorsports, and it gives you a lot to kind of just keep your head down on and keep working. And there's so much going on, you can't even really stop to think about, well, I'm working a lot. So I've been enjoying it. And, you know, it's a challenge to an extent, but it's an enjoyable one.
Perfect. We'll get it over to Jess.
Okay. So we here at Pit Lane Parlay are big animal people. We like to know what your spirit animal would be and why.
Ooh, spirit animal. That's a great one. If I had to choose a spirit animal, I don't know. I might go with, like, you know, it's so easy to choose, like, you know, try and choose some sort of like strong animal, you know, with those sort of characteristics and whatnot, and do something like that. I've never really thought about that one. That's a great one. I am an animal person. Love dogs, have a dog back home, but I don't think it would be fair to say a dog is my spirit animal. You know, I've always been a big puffin guy. So let me just go with a puffin. I'll go with the unorthodox answer. My spirit animal is going to be a puffin. They're just some weird birds. They're really cute. They're fun. So I'm going to go with puffin.
I like it.
I love it. It's funny. As soon as you mentioned dog, my dog jumped up and started staring at me like he was supposed to join in there. Back to racing. It's been mentioned in passing over the last year or two that Kyle Larson is kind of looking to get into the Indy 500. Do you think we will see somebody like Kyle Larson, maybe not necessarily him exactly, but, you know, a guy from the NASCAR world or somewhere else enter into the 500 in the next couple of years? Seems like that discussion has died down a little bit because everything is Alonso mania right now.
Yeah, that's a great point. I definitely think first and foremost, I think Alonso inspired a lot of people. You know, I think obviously there's some people in NASCAR who probably, you know, so there's definitely some egos amongst drivers, and that's not a bad thing. And I would be surprised if none of the drivers in NASCAR were, you know, not envious at all about the attention that Alonso got. I mean, you know, the attention he got just to come over and do the 500 was incredible. You know, obviously there was the international media attention, but even from the U.S. media, he was the major story, even in defeat, really. You know, obviously you had the Scott Dixon crash, and it was a good race overall. You had, you know, Takuma Sato winning, but nonetheless, you know, I think a lot of people paid attention to that. So I wouldn't be surprised at all. And in fact, I probably would say we will have, you know, I would be, you know, next year, if you were to qualify it with 19, I think obviously it doesn't sound like anything at this point is going to happen. I mean, there's obviously still time, but, and Larson is right at the top of the list of sort of people, you know, you obviously have Kyle Busch as well. You know, does Kurt Busch try it again? Maybe obviously from a, you know, NASCAR folks in general perspective, former drivers, you got Tony Stewart now talking about maybe doing it, which is awesome. Certainly seems like a sign to keep an eye on. Cause obviously he's talked about it multiple times and is increasingly sounding like he's serious about it to do it by 2020. So I'd be surprised if we don't have someone do it in the next couple of years. Again, whether it's for 2019, I'd be maybe a little surprised at this point, just because it doesn't seem like there's much out there. The Kyle Larson thing is interesting. You know, it seems like he clearly wants to try it when you get him to talk about it. But the practicality of it, you know, first and foremost, I think Chip Ganassi wants to see Kyle really winning in NASCAR potentially before he lets him do it. And you know, Kyle's kind of stuck in his in-between land where he's a winner now, but he still hasn't been consistently winning races. I'm trying to think that even when I'm not sure he's won a race this year in NASCAR.
Not that I remember.
As far as the NASCAR Cup Series, right? So, you know, that's a little bit problematic for everyone who wants to see him do it. As far as it, you know, people who want to see him do it ASAP, because I'm not saying that, you know, Chip Ganassi is going to wait till he wins a championship, but you know, he didn't win a race this year. He's not going to win the championship now. So, you know, I don't think that helps his case. But again, you got, you know, Kyle Busch was interesting. He said he had everything lined up and someone vetoed it. I would presume that's probably Joe Gibbs who vetoed it. So, you know, does Kyle Busch keep pushing for it and somehow make it happen? It's possible. So I'd be surprised if in the next couple of years we don't see it. I think Alonso starred something that was legit. I think we're going to continue to see even possibly, you know, former F1 guys look at doing it, you know, guys who maybe are fresh out of F1 or whatnot. Obviously, we've seen a lot of former F1 guys or guys who just lost seats, you know, look at coming to IndyCar full time to an extent. So I definitely think that Alonso started a trend. And again, I think he'll probably be in the race next year, most likely. So I definitely think in the next couple of years, we're going to see that a lot. But, you know, is it for 19? It's not looking likely at this point. Is it for 20? I think it's too early to say for sure, except Tony Stewart, who says that, you know, he does want to do it. So I think Tony Stewart's looking like increasingly likely for 20, certainly not a sure thing yet. And then will we get a couple other guys to hop on? I think that'd be great, you know, because again, you know, you look at the kind of cross pollination and the cross marketing and all the opportunities it presents for these series to try and get their, you know, get their properties in front of other people and in front of eyeballs that don't usually look at them. It's a huge opportunity. So I definitely think it's the start of a trend, but of course, you know, it doesn't seem like there's anyone right now outside of maybe Tony Stewart who we can say is, you know, really close to a sure thing.
Sure. Yeah. Great answer there. I will turn it over. Was that my question? So I guess it's Matt's turn.
Yeah. So I guess another, maybe like get to know you question here, maybe not comedic relief per se. Well, depending on your answer, maybe, but who is your favorite IndyCar driver? Do you have one?
I don't know if I have a favorite, you know, as far as on the track, because I really try not to look at it that way. Obviously, yeah, there's like, some personalities.
Yeah, either like professionally
obviously there's some. The yeah, yeah. I mean, honestly, you know, I like great personalities, you know. So, you know, frankly, you know, when I first started covering the series and you had Sage Karam coming up, I thought, oh boy, you know, this kid was going to be great for the series. You know, he was kind of a little bit brash, a little bit cocky. You know, he made some ballsy moves on the track and then he didn't apologize for them after the race. You know, obviously I'm thinking back to that Auto Club Speedway race, which was probably the most insane race I've seen ever. So he was someone who I kind of had my eyes on, who I thought was going to be potential a great kid for IndyCar. It's kind of been sad a little bit to see how he's been frozen out to an extent, and we'll see if that continues for a while. But no, you know, obviously there's so many great personalities. You know, Helio, of course, is another one who, you know, was probably had the best personality. He's kind of been frozen out a little bit, although obviously, hopefully he'll be back for 9500 next year. You know, obviously, you know, Graham Rahal is, you know, you talk about great interviews, you know, Graham Rahal is certainly a great interview. You know, you talk to, so, I mean, sometimes I'm judging, honestly, my favorite drivers to an extent based off that. You know, some of the guys who are going to be more likely to really give you great answers. But, you know, so I think, you know, some of the drivers are better than others. Again, you know, you got guys like Helio who seem to be, you know, also Tony Kanaan, I think, is another one who, you know, anytime you talk to him, you're going to end up, you know, laughing a lot, and he's going to end up telling you some hilarious story, you know, or something like that. So I think, you know, some of those vets, it'd be pretty tough to go against them. But, you know, hopefully the, you know, I think, you know, Newgarden's great as well. You know, Alexander Rossi obviously has turned into, it seems like he's kind of, it seemed like when Rossi first came over to IndyCar, he was still a little bit in his F1 shell, but it seems like he's kind of coming out of that more and more and kind of really starting to show his personality. So, obviously it'd be tough to also not mention Hinchcliffe. I mean, Hinchcliffe and what he formed this year with Robbie Wickens, you know, particularly obviously before the crash, unfortunately, but even after it, you know, they've still been doing a lot of great content together and some funny stuff. So, honestly, I don't know if I have one favorite or another, but I'd say, you know, some of the best interviews are probably Hinchcliffe and Graham Rahal. So, I'd go with those two probably.
Perfect. We'll get it to Jess.
All right. So this time I want you to host a Cinco de Mayo party. And at your party, you're going to have a pinata. What would you stuff your pinata with for your guests?
Ooh, that's a really good one. If it was selfishly for myself, I might choose something a lot weirder, like some sort of food that only I would like Caesar salad. So I'm not going to choose that because that would just be way too weird for folks. I would go with something that everyone would like these days, and I would probably stuff it with Chipotle.
Yeah.
And I would just let people whack some Chipotle out of a pinata, and you know, you could record it. It would go semi-viral. It would be a grand time.
I think that's awesome.
I like it.
And with that, we are going to switch gears slightly here and go through a bunch of news, some that we've might have touched on in the questions here. And I'll turn it over to Matt to bring up the topics as we go through it.
Sure. And, you know, we'll kind of toss this back and forth here and we'll get Adam's take on a couple of these for sure. The biggest news that probably came out over the week was kind of some of the quotes that we got from Fernando Alonso. McLaren confirmed that they would not be racing full-time in IndyCar in 2019. However, they did not rule out some sort of entry in a couple of races, mainly the Indy 500. But then Alonso came out with this golden nugget of a quote saying that he was never tied to McLaren if he was coming to IndyCar and something along those lines, which kind of caught everybody off guard. So we'll start with Jess on this one. Jess, did you have any thoughts about what Alonso had to say as far as, you know, not being tied at the hip to McLaren if McLaren did indeed come to IndyCar for next season?
I mean, not to be rude to McLaren or anything, but that should have kind of been a given almost because of how poorly his last few seasons have gone with them. And I know, completely different series, yada, yada, yada. I mean, it would have been great for this series to have McLaren back. But really, Alonso would have been the get. So I think I'm more disappointed just in the fact that he was like kind of teasing everybody the whole time when he knew darn good and well he wasn't coming. Like, it would have been a little nicer of him instead of dropping it like a bomb to be like, you know, I'm testing this year, but it's not really in my plans. So we'll see what happens. But that's okay. I am a little disappointed, though.
Well, he might still be coming, just to clarify. It's just not going to be with McLaren. Like, I still think the Indy 500 is definitely still in the frame. So hopefully we can see that. Mike or Adam, do you guys have any thoughts on that?
I thought obviously it was the comments were, you know, that were interesting. I mean, I think, you know, he said a lot and some of it was translated. So it was tough to make out exactly what he said. I mean, you know, there were some stories I read where it was like, you know, the headline was saying that he was never considering coming to IndyCar. And then if you read his comments, he said, yeah, I was considering it until August. So, I mean, you know, the comments to me were a little bit bizarre as far as the ones last week. I'm not sure if he was frustrated with how many rumors got out there about it. And he felt like, you know, this was just a little bit of time for him to kind of clap back and kind of just, you know, say like, hey, guys, I control the narrative, you know. And so I'm not sure if it was something like that, but you know, the comments were definitely a little bizarre because if you remember back, you know, it's not like all these stories were based off, you know, some of them initially were, some of them were throughout the course of time, including mine, but it's not like every story about this was with anonymous rumors. There was Zach Brown on the record saying, yes, Fernando's considering coming full time, you know? So it's not like, that was, I'm not sure why that would ever have been in doubt. You know, his comments kind of, and I certainly understand, you know, how it's all kind of become a blur as these situations sometimes do, particularly ones that drag out like this one did. So I certainly, I'm not trying to criticize anyone by any stretch, but you know, you see some of the comments or articles that have come out in recent days that have kind of suggested that he said he was never considering coming here full time, which I believe he might have said over the course of, you know, what was seemed like a couple paragraphs worth of sentences, but he certainly was. I mean, we know for a fact he was. It was confirmed on the record by his boss. So, you know, I think what happened was is McLaren, it seems like they just got bogged down between their performance in F1, which certainly I think was raising major alarm bells amongst their, you know, ownership group, amongst obviously everyone else, including like their fan base. And you combine that with kind of the quagmire they got stuck in with the whole Honda Chevy situation. And we never even really heard about how things went sponsorship wise. We know they were on the ground trying to find sponsorship, but I think those two major factors between the Honda Chevy situation, everything that happened with that, and how even their workaround by going to Chevy seemed to ultimately potentially lead to even more problems. You combine that with the fact that they're just having major issues in F1. I mean, you literally have a new team in Haas F1 that is, you know, 3 to 4 years old, and they're performing better than this, you know, 60 to 70 to 80 year old storied brand in McLaren, you know, just for example. I just think those forces conspire to ultimately kill the deal. And I'll hopefully have more to report in due time, as I'm sure other IndyCar reporters will. You know, a lot of times the way situations go, and you'll see this just in not even just in motorsports or sports, but just in all sorts of reporting, is that, you know, it's tough to get details on things as they're happening, and particularly before they're announced. But in the days and the weeks, and sometimes depending on how big the story is, even years after, you'll see more details start to trickle out. The key players involved will start to leak more information than they would have before, because they won't have to worry as much, because you're talking about something that happened in the past now. So hopefully over the next couple of weeks, you know, we'll have some more information. But, you know, I would imagine that those forces just kind of conspire to kill the deal. Again, we'll have to see what happens with Alonso. You know, to your point about, does he still do full-time here? I don't think he's going to do full-time. I think he's going to do the Indy 500 and maybe a couple other races. Maybe he picks and chooses and does, you know, COTA and maybe one or two others. You know, it does seem like these F1 guys, unfortunately, were a little bit spooked by Robert Wickens' crash. I'm not sure if that factored into Alonso's decision at all. We know he said that he made his decision in you know, late August or in August. And, you know, we know that was kind of, Pocono was that deadline that Andretti had imposed, you know, himself several weeks ago. So tough to know exactly what kind of, you know, killed the deal for McLaren full time as far as 100%. But clearly there's a couple major factors. Clearly, I still think it's quite likely that Alonso does Indy 500, and whether he does a couple other races, we'll see. To your point, we cannot rule out that he does it full time yet, but that's not necessarily what I'm hearing. I definitely haven't heard anything for a done deal, or something that we could absolutely confirm, which is why we haven't confirmed it. But you know, as far as what we've reported, but I'd be surprised at this point if he does the full season. I think, you know, he kind of made that clear in his comments. So I think most likely he's just doing Indy 500, and you know, does he ever do the full season? We'll see. But certainly, no question that the situation got dragged on quite a while. I think anyone who, you know, kind of eventually tuned out or felt like it was getting dragged on to the point of ad nauseum can be justified in feeling that way. It definitely, you know, the rumblings and rumors and reports started in, gosh, I think April. You know, so it dragged on for quite a while. But at the same time, you know, it was over something that would have been quite historic and a major, major development for IndyCar. So you can't be mad at anyone involved, in my opinion. You know, Zach Brown tried to make it happen, and I know some people might be frustrated that he didn't make it happen, but boy, if he had pulled it off, this would have been one of the biggest developments in IndyCar history. So, you know, in certain ways, in my opinion, you just got to give him credit for trying. And it's unfortunate it got dragged out the way it did, but it's just kind of the way the cookie crumbles, and we'll have to see what happens from here.
Perfect. So, trying to figure out what the next biggest piece of news we got since we did our last news episode, maybe like 2 or 3 weeks ago. Probably one of the most interesting ones is, given that Formula One was over here in America this weekend, a couple of reporters took the time to ask F1 drivers what their general thoughts about IndyCar were, especially since IndyCar, in the general sense, is on its way back up. I think many would agree. And one of them that really caught me off guard was Lewis Hamilton, who said on IndyCar, he said, "I'd definitely like to try it. I've never really driven on an oval before. Growing up in Europe, it wasn't what I aspired to race in. It was always F1, but they have some great drivers here." I could have swore I read something a while back that said Lewis Hamilton like never wanted to do Indy, and he took some cheap shots at Alonso when he came over here and said, you know, whatever, not that impressive, or something along those lines. Mike, did it catch you off guard any when Lewis was saying, "Yeah, hey, maybe I'll try Indy someday"?
Yeah, it 100% caught me off guard. Yeah, I'm pretty sure you're 100% right. He did, you know, take some shots at Alonso and IndyCar last year when Alonso was here, and I think even prior to that, he had said some things. I'm not a huge fan of Lewis Hamilton, the personality. I know he's a very good driver, but his personality rubbed me in the wrong way, as I'm sure I'm not the only one. But if he wanted to come over and race IndyCar or the Indy 500, I can't say I would be against it, because that would open up IndyCar to probably a lot more eyes, if not even more so than Alonso, because Lewis Hamilton is, you know, kind of the brightest star in F1 right now, winning, you know, almost winning his fifth championship, and I don't know how many years in a row at this point, but I don't know if it's all 5 years in a row or it's starting to blend together. But so yeah, it caught me off guard. But listen, if he wants to come over and try the Indy 500, or you know, maybe test it out and, you know, kind of go that route, I'm not against it.
Jess, what are your thoughts?
I'm not against it either. I think I've said as much before. Anything that'll bring more eyes to IndyCar can't be all bad. Yes, I know he has an attitude. Yes, he said a lot of nasty things about IndyCar. But if he wants to come and give it a try, let him come and give it a try, because it might just be another huge draw numbers wise for eyeballs on the 500, or even if he just does a test.
Adam, you got any thoughts on that?
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see what happens. You know, as far as his prior comments, you know, it's tough to, you know, a lot of, not to try and, you know, denigrate anyone, but the European press is very kind of quick to almost put words in people's mouths from comments that they almost, you know, didn't even say, or kind of they embellish. And so I definitely remember those comments, and I'm sure he probably did really make them, but I think you're right. I think they were somewhat more aimed at kind of taking a shot at Fernando Alonso, and by way of kind of taking a shot at IndyCar. I think he said something along the lines of, you know, it's just a little bit below his level or something along those lines. Maybe not those exact words, but he kind of hinted at that notion. I mean, his comments last week, I think he said maybe the Indy 500. He also said maybe NASCAR. You know, it'll be interesting to see what he does, because he's the sort of guy who, you know, he's kind of, I could see him getting, first and foremost, it's very clear he loves America. And that's not rare. I mean, you know, lots of Europeans love America. Lots of European men love coming to America and the idea of coming to live here. You see that with some of these players in MLS. And so, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if in, you know, 3 to 5 years, he thinks about giving it a go. I mean, I don't think anything's imminent by any stretch. I don't think, you know, Mercedes has no ties at all to I mean, it, you know, relatively speaking, to IndyCar. So it's not like a Honda situation last year with, or a couple years ago with Alonso, where, you know, they had, it was a Honda team in F1, and then they had a Honda team in IndyCar. So I don't think anything's imminent by any stretch with either for NASCAR or IndyCar as far as Lewis Hamilton. But in a couple years after he gets bored with F1, which, you know, I don't think it's next year, but is it 2 years? Is it 3 years? Is it 4 years? Is it 5 years? It's probably somewhere in there. You got to think, you know, does he come give the Indy 500 a whirl? You know, I think he's one of the ones who might have said he's a little scared of ovals. That's the thing about these F1 guys. And again, you know, this is no one's fault, and it's kind of a tough thing to even say, but I do think, unfortunately, based off of some of the comments I've read, you know, just my empirical experiences reading F1 drivers' comments, it does seem like the Watkins crash, you know, might have, you know, made these guys think a little bit longer and harder about racing on ovals. And so, you know, I definitely think it's something to keep an eye on. I'm sure, you know, obviously Lewis knows the prestige of Indy, and he knows, you know, that's a real race, you know, as opposed to, you know, you see Alonso really blast F1 and notes that, you know, he doesn't even call it real racing sometimes. And, you know, we all know why, of course. I mean, it's a fantastic series, but there are races that are over after the first turn. And so, yeah, something to keep an eye on. I don't think anything imminent. And, you know, does he come try NASCAR? He said, he said in those comments, you know, I've always wanted to race at Watkins Glen. You know, by the time that happens, maybe IndyCar's back at Watkins Glen. So, yeah, I don't think anything's imminent for sure in the next year or even 2 years. But 3-4 years down the line, definitely something to keep an eye on.
Okay, so it looks like maybe one more piece of news before we get to our final segment here, and we'll kind of walk Adam through that. One weird thing that really happened this week was that, and I think we kind of assumed that this was going to come at some point, was that Santino Ferrucci's F2 team Trident Racing has filed a lawsuit with, I believe, a court in Milan, Italy, basically suing Santino Ferrucci for a breach of contract up to about $575,000 American dollars plus legal fees. So I guess we'll start with Jess on this one. I know it's just a lawsuit, so legally nothing's happened yet as far as, you know, Ferrucci owing anything, because they'll have to go through the courts and whatnot. But do you think this puts his Dale Coyne Racing seat that he's rumored to be the front runner for next season? Do you think that puts this in jeopardy?
No, I'm sorry. Sorry for the pause there. I thought that the article said that he had been ordered to pay that already.
I thought it was a suit. I could be wrong.
I'm trying to find the article.
I mean, someone correct me if I'm wrong. I thought it was a lawsuit, not a you have to pay.
No, this article is Santino Ferrucci ordered to pay by Italian court. So it's already been decided.
But they could counter sue. But I guess, okay, so based on that wordage, I mean, he probably doesn't have to pay anything until they go through an appeal and all that crap. But to your point,
yeah, if they're going to appeal.
Does this put it in jeopardy?
I don't see it being in jeopardy at all. I mean, the only reason it would be is if that was all of the funding he had. But I don't. I obviously don't know his financial situation to a T, but I don't think that would be the case. So I don't see it really putting him in jeopardy at all.
Mike?
I agree, but if I were somebody who has, you know, maybe a decent amount of budget, I would be calling Dale Coyne and kind of just like, you know, sitting outside of Dale Coyne's office in a tent waiting to see if something happens so that you can be the first one there. Because it certainly could, but I just can't imagine with how long these things really take to play out that we see Ferrucci pay, you know, 500 plus grand. You know, I'm sure they'll settle for something less than that. If at least that's what I'm, you know, guessing at. But, you know, if I were Connor Daly or Sage Karam or somebody, I might be calling Coyne just to say, hey, listen, if something happens, call me first.
Yeah, I think Jess nailed it. I think Jess nailed it in terms of, you know, it probably won't derail it, but we don't know his financial situation, or certainly I don't. You know, Dale Coyne, it seems like that's one of those cars that, you know, he obviously wants to bring in good drivers, and some of the drivers that come through there are absolutely, you know, he's had former F1 drivers, all these sorts of things. So, you know, it's a good seat to have, but at the same time, clearly Dale, you know, expects money to come in for that seat. So, you know, I think to Jess's point, probably he'll be able to weather this one, but maybe he doesn't have as much money as we think. And, you know, 500K in IndyCar, it's not a ton, but that's a nice little chunk. So, you know, if he's one of those guys who had borderline money, and then this happens, maybe it derails it. You know, if he's got loads of cash, I think you guys are spot on that it certainly won't. So, I think obviously it's a good car, but you got to bring some money to it. So, again, you know, if he has borderline cash, this could be the thing that you know, is the final nail that makes it not happen. But if he's on really solid financial footing for one reason or the other, whether it's through his own family or through some sort of sponsors, presumably he'll be fine.
Right on. Mike, do we have any sponsor shout outs we need to do before we get to our final segment here?
Yes, thank you for reminding me. You know, again, thank you to Wildfire Radio for their continued support. Listen to the show if you'd like on wildfireradio.com. Fridays 3:15 to 4:15 Eastern, and SoundCue Audio. If you go to www.soundcueaudio.com and use promo code PLPFAN, you get 35% off your purchase, no matter what you get. If it's a big purchase or small purchase, you still get 35% off. And their headphones are real good. So give them a look. And we should have something coming up shortly, another giveaway with Toronto Motorsports in the next 2 weeks ish. So, and with that, I guess we can get to the pitfall. And just so Adam's aware, pitfalls are our weekly segment where we either throw somebody under the bus or make fun of somebody or something in the motorsports world. A lot of the times it's, you know, not IndyCar related. So feel free to, you know, chime in with your own if you'd like, or if you'd like to chime in with your opinion when we're each done with ours, feel free. I'll start. Mine should be pretty quick here. The new Formula E car for, what is it, the 2018-2019 season that starts here in about 6 weeks or so. It's really ugly. I don't even know how to... I know I'm not usually so blunt and negative on this show, but I heard somebody... Or I heard... I read somebody describe it as kind of a Batmobile with an F1 halo on it. And it's not far off, especially when you look at the black Nissan without a livery on it. It really... It's, yeah, it's kind of like a combination of like a Batmobile and an LMP1 car with... It's just... I don't know... Maybe I'm speaking out of turn here, but it's pretty ugly.
And it's got a halo, so that makes it good.
Yeah.
I'll go with mine next. Mine was, if you listened a couple weeks ago, I'm going to sound like a broken record here. But mine again is Sebastian Vettel, for the same reason as the last one, where he panicked, made a mistake, got spun, pretty much ruined his race, pretty much made it that much easier for Lewis Hamilton to win the championship, and continued to not fess up to said mistake after the race. He was battling with Daniel Ricciardo. Clearly Ricciardo's right next to him, wheel to wheel. It wasn't like Ricciardo put his nose in at the last second. I mean, Ricciardo was clearly next to him, and Vettel continued to try to apex on the exit of the corner like Ricciardo wasn't there, and they both touched wheels, and Vettel's the one who spun out. He did have a good bounce back for the rest of the race, but I mean, it's kind of the same thing we saw in Japan with Verstappen, where kind of didn't put his car in the best position and then proceeded to blame the driver he got in the tangle with. So that was my pitfall for the week.
Mine is going to be kind of funny because that's just what I do. So mine this week is going to be the three of us here at Pit Lane Parlay. We did our we'll finally refer to it as our drunk episode for our Patreon subscribers. Yes, go subscribe, it's worth it. And well, we all almost died, so that's all I'm gonna say.
Everybody it was good time. Very fun to listen to. So feel free to check it out. It's for Patreon members only. And every time you sign up for Patreon, you get t-shirts and stickers. And this week, I'll put it up tonight. We're going to put up our intro music, if you would like that as your ringtone. And I think we're going to do something else on there probably in the next week or two. With that, I guess we can wrap it up. Adam, again, you know, thank you very much for joining us. Everybody can find Adam on sportsbusinessdaily.com in the motorsports section. It's you know, it's a pretty good read almost every day, even if it's not discussing IndyCar. There's always, you know, some cool motorsports stuff on there. So thank you for joining us. And guys, unless we have anything else, I think Jess can wrap it up.
All right, and guys, keep your lug nuts tight.
The music for this week's episode was done by Impulse Studios and produced by Podcast Delay Productions. Web design courtesy of A30.com.